The superb Baltimore by Nina Simone, played in honour of Sylvia, who's lived in Baltimore since she moved there directly after the war as a GI bride, and we heard from Sylvia earlier on. And the reason we're discussing all of this is a book entitled GI Brides, and its two authors, Duncan Barrett and Nuala Calvi, are here with us now. Welcome both of you to BBC London.
Thank you.
Hi.
First of all, thanks for putting us in touch with Sylvia. She was terrific. How many GI brides from the actual war period do you think are around still?
I don't know. What do you reckon? We went to America for 3 months last year, and we found about 65, I think, in total. I mean, there were 70,000 originally.
70,000, yeah. Very high figure, isn't it?
And obviously they... you know, the people, Sylvia's one of the youngest, to be honest, and she's 85. You know, we met people in their late 80s, some in their early 90s, I think. So it's just a question of how many of those people are still around, I suppose.
It inevitably, it's a generation that's dying out. But as you say, there must therefore, if you do the sums, there are hundreds of thousands of children, grandchildren, cousins, uncles, of people who are still living here as well, aren't there?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we did when we went over was I actually tracked down my own American family, because my grandmother was a GI bride.
Oh, was she? So is that where the idea came
from? Where the idea came from. And I found I had hundreds of cousins over there that I'd never known about. So that was part of the journey for us.
So did you grow up knowing her story? Was it kind of part of the family mythology?
Well, like quite a few GI brides, unfortunately, the guy she married, she didn't know very well. When she got there, she realised... He wasn't a great guy. In fact, he turned out to be a bit of a raging alcoholic.
Right.
So she ended up running away and coming back to England and remarried. And the man that I grew up knowing as my grandpa wasn't actually my real grandpa.
Right.
But it wasn't until kind of towards the end of her life that she really opened up and started talking about that. And that's when I kind of got interested in finding this family.
What do you think was the general response here, if to a girl meeting and marrying a GI? Was it, oh, well done, you know, you've got one, congratulations? Or was it, you know, why aren't you with a nice British, tell me?
I think it depends. I mean, I think a lot of parents obviously realised that if their daughters married Americans, they might never see them again. I mean, because in those days, you know, going back and
transatlantic
forth
travel wasn't feasible, was
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it really meant saying goodbye to them and not knowing when they might see them again. And also there were, you know, there were kind of rumours about the Americans. There was the famous overpaid, oversexed and over here.
Yep.
You know, the idea they were untrustworthy, that they lied about things, that they were braggarts and so on. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people we spoke to said that their mothers particularly actually got on really well with them. And, you know, Sylvia, for example, her mother started off quite suspicious about the GIs and said, you know, I want to see who you're going out with. I want to check them out. And then kind of completely fell for them herself and kind of relived her own youth by, you know, flirting and having fun with these Americans.
There was an undoubted glamour, wasn't it? But how much was that a reality, or how much was that the kind of, you know, Hollywood mythology of everyone looking like Clark Gable and living in a mansion in Bel Air?
Well, I think there was some reality that they looked very glamorous, these Americans. Their uniforms, for a start, were a lot higher quality and better cut than those of the average British.
A bit cooler as well. Yeah.
They're a bit cooler. They smoked Lucky Strike and Camel, and you know, they smelt good because they had deodorant and they had aftershave, and not many British
men. And they hadn't been
at
war for 3 years, you know. Yeah. I guess on terrible rations with people shooting at you.
Yeah.
So there was some reality to that fact.
But was there also a lot of disappointment? Because I guess most of the young, you know, you're speaking usually about very young English girls who wouldn't have a great knowledge of the realities of American life, who turn up, you know, I don't know, if you've married a man from Idaho and you turn up, you know, you're not exactly going to Hollywood, are you?
Yeah, I think often that was the case, that the Americans would exaggerate what their home situation was. And also, I suppose that the British girls saw them in uniform. They saw them quite smart and quite a kind of... you know, sort of high status appearance in a way, and then they go back and find they're on a farm in the middle of nowhere, you know, mucking out the pigs or whatever.
And did that happen?
Yeah, definitely. That happened to a lot of women. You know, or in different ways, they found there were things about America that weren't how they'd imagined it. I mean, Sylvia, actually, who you spoke to, she told us she imagined Baltimore. She'd never heard of it. When Bob first said, I come from this place, Baltimore, she went to the library and got out a map to see where it was. And she saw it was on the East Coast. So she thought, oh, it must be like New York. It'll be skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And she had all these images from films of, you know, people driving sports cars and you know, this kind of glamorous Hollywood lifestyle. And then she got there and she said she was quite shocked that it was quite run down and a bit grimy and, you know, not what she expected at all.
I guess there are all sorts of other issues as well. Were there lots of, I mean, did you find women who, when they got there, weren't accepted by the American families? Did that happen?
Yeah, that happened quite a lot, and interestingly, it was always the mother that seemed to be the one who didn't quite like her lovely little son bringing back an English girl. And one of the women that we talk about in the book, called Lynn, her mother-in-law, she was Italian-American mother-in-law, so very close to her son, and when Lynn turned up, she wasn't too happy, and in the end, she turned to her son and said, it's her or me, and made him choose between his wife and his mother.
Which did he choose?
Well, his wife, right. But they ended up living in a shack in the woods for quite a while because they had no money after that.
There was also the, I mean, another thing Lynn said was when she first arrived in New York, there were protests against the GI brides from the American women who thought, because they were basically saying, you're stealing
that.
Our husbands. She arrived with these women with placards saying, English whores, go home. And that was her first sight of America.
It's not exactly welcoming.
No, exactly.
We haven't mentioned race yet, because there were quite a lot of black Americans stationed here, weren't there? I mean, how did that come up in your research?
Well, we were really hoping we might find an interracial couple, but I guess they were quite rare. There were some, but they were very rare, partly because they needed the permission of the US Army to marry, and often they would not give their permission in the case of a mixed-race marriage. Also because in many states in America at that time, it was actually illegal.
Really?
But we did come across on the boats that they took over there, the Red Cross looked after them, and one of the things that they did was kind of counselling the women. And in particular, we did read about some cases where they were looking out for, there was a white French woman who had married a black GI, for example, and they gave her quite a lot of counselling and sort of telling her what to expect and, you know, to try to prepare her for the kind of life that they would have and how difficult it would be.
Because I've certainly heard stories here of English girls falling in love with kind of black American GIs and that causing trouble here and all sorts of issues of that kind, really. I mean, that's a bit of a kind of an understory, I think, that often didn't get told at the time. There were tensions, weren't there, around
there
that?
There were,
really.
Yeah. I mean, there were probably about 100,000 black GIs in Britain, if you just think about the percentage of black Americans. And the American army was very keen to keep them segregated, but the British authorities didn't agree with segregation, so they refused to comply. But in the end, what the American army did was they'd give them time off at different times.
Right.
So in effect, you know, they wouldn't be in the same pubs at the same time.
But equally, though, I guess because, of the, you know, if you've been living in a segregated America, to come to a London where everyone can mix freely must itself have been like a new license and freedom, mustn't it, really, I guess? And if some of those white GIs look good, I'm sure some of the black GIs looked even cooler. I mean,
I bet, and especially with the dancing.
Yeah,
because the English girls love that about the Americans in particular. We did speak to one woman who married a white American who was in charge of it. This was in Southampton, in charge of a group of black GIs who were loading and unloading the boats, basically. And she said it would constantly happen that they would be out on a date together and they'd be walking home from the cinema and he would just say to her, oh, hold on, just sit there for a bit and put her down on a bench and rush across the road to where there was a fight about to break out and he would be kind of talking down the white soldiers and trying to stop them from beating up the black ones, basically.
And often it was over the fact that if they saw a white girl dancing with the black GIs, that made them really angry.
Wow.